Pie in the Sky Media. This series contains adult language and descriptions of graphic violence throughout. Listener discretion is advised.
I don't like episodes like this, I'll be honest with you, but you knew that, and that's why you didn't say anything to me, and we'll have a talk later, off air. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back, Criminal Mischief Nation, to another bonus episode. I'm one of your hosts, Brandon Morgan. As always, joined with the great Carolyn Osorio. Like I like to say, but I haven't said in a while, we don't deserve her. And yet she shows up anyway. Carolyn. Mm-hmm.
I know. What am I supposed to say? You love doing that. It's like, okay, let me manipulate you into submission here.
Happens to be true. How was Las Vegas? Tell everyone where you were and what you did.
You know what? I've already gushed to you. You want me to gush more?
Just a little bit. Just give me 30 seconds.
I had to stop myself from wearing my U2 concert t-shirt, my tee.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How many thousands of dollars was a concert t-shirt from the Sphere?
Oh my gosh. Okay, is that your back scratch?
It's my back scratcher. Don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. Just keep talking.
Okay. U2 was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Stop. Uh-huh.
I'm done.
That's what my face looked like the whole time when I was in the concert.
Just rocking? Yeah. Like you were getting your back scratched? All right, cool.
Oh my gosh, no. I mean, it was awesome. The Sphere is amazing. I can't not... It's like, it's everything you go to a concert for. Everything.
So where were your seats in relation to the stage? If I'm Bono, where would I have to look to see you?
What was so cool, Brandon, is like it was weird because every seat was, I think, a pretty good seat, but they were so close. Like we were not on the floor. Mm-hmm. So we were like here. Yeah. And then it was like the projection.
Yeah.
And it was just, I can't even describe it. It was so great. And they were so great. And, you know, my husband kind of was like, yeah, it kind of made me sad because like the passage of time and all that. And I get how you can have that. Sometimes you watch bands and you're like, wow, you know, how 20 years have gone by or whatever.
Yeah, they got old like the rest of us. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that he was feeling a little bit of that, but I was like, but I mean, he had a great time and everything, but it was like, everybody was so into it and everybody like all the songs you knew and you just were, it was great. I don't want to keep gushing because I will. And you know, it was just wonderful.
Talk about watching your heroes age. I'm seeing Springsteen in Vegas next month.
Oh, so where?
Where the hockey team plays. Like they're like 20,000 seat arena there. They're, you know, stadium or whatever.
Well, you know, he looks great. You know,
he looks okay. He looks okay. You know, his voice is still there to a certain extent. You know, he's 70.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
74 years old.
You know what I watched? I don't know if you remember, and I know you remember, but you know, when We Are the World came out.
I can't wait to watch that documentary. I cannot.
I watched it. It was so good. I was like, oh my God.
Did they say that Springsteen drove himself and parked across the street and walked in?
And he was like, oh, you're just going to love it. You're going to love it.
He got good parking. And you know what's funny? I know that I used to live down the street from A&M Studios when I lived in Hollywood. You know what's right across the street from A&M, like where he parked? A very famous strip club called Crazy Girls. So he parked in front of Crazy Girls and then jaywalked across North La Brea Avenue to get into A&M Studios, which is so Springsteen.
You know,
everyone else takes limos there. Yeah.
It was so great. I can't wait for you to watch it so we can talk about it. So let's not talk about it now, but I don't want to ruin it for you.
I remember that song being huge when we were kids.
I remember it too. I mean, I just had my, it's like,
I'm bummed that, I'm bummed that Prince didn't go. He went and partied instead, right?
Oh my gosh. And they talked about it.
Yeah.
And it was so great that like, it's not only just the song, but how it came together and what went into it and everything, the egos and kind of like, if you get, you know, the people who actually got to have a singing part,
Yeah.
And just like how, even though you have all these famous people and stuff, like there's still regular human beings that get scared and nervous and like, you know, yep. the egos that were there and just who's getting attention, who's not. And I mean, it was just really, it's like a slice of time.
I mean, they gave Springsteen the chorus. Okay. He got to actually sing We Are the World.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Michael Jackson is the one who really got the full, but I didn't know that I didn't know that Michael and Lionel Richie were the ones that wrote the song. I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. 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 It was all their
thing. You've got to watch it. It's so good.
The music a week prior, right? The music tracks were already laid down and then they invited everybody. I hear they shit on John Denver a little bit. Is that true?
I don't remember that.
I heard maybe it wasn't in the doc, but my brother told me that he saw a video of Paul Simon making a joke saying, if this place catches on fire, John Denver will instantly be on the charts again. Which is kind of mean.
There was something like that, but it was so compared to the greatness of the whole thing. It wasn't.
I can't wait to watch it. Where did you watch? Was it like streaming somewhere? Where is it streaming?
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix. I think it was on Netflix, but it's so good. And it was like, you know, it's so interesting to peel back and get the backstory behind the actual thing and what's going on.
Okay. Anyone younger than, you know, 35, We Are the World was a, I don't even know what it's called. It wasn't a protest song. It was a
Song for to raise money for children in Africa.
Yeah, starving children in Africa. But there's a genre. And I forget.
Well, it started the genre, the farm aid and the
right. But I thought because Bono did Do They Know It's Christmas like a year or so before that with Bob Geldof.
So they did rip it off from that, but other people ripped it off from that.
Because they saw
the power of it.
Huge. You know? Huge. We bought the t-shirts. My mom bought my brother and I We Are the World fucking t-shirts.
I know. That's why I had my lighter because I wrote an op-ed as a kid to like,
HBO did a huge special on it as it was happening, right? Mm. The film crew in there was an HBO crew. Mm. And so I remember watching this like 15-minute documentary that HBO did about it. And I just remember for a few minutes, they followed Kenny Rogers towards the end of the night and he had his music sheet and he was getting everybody's signature on it. And then everyone else was like, oh man, we have to do that too. Imagine what one of those music sheets with all of those signatures on it would be worth today. Because
what's funny? It started with Diana Ross. Mm. She came up to Huey Lewis and was like,
Lewis.
Great. And she came up with her little, with the thing. And she's like, I mean, she's such a huge star, right?
Yeah, she asked Huey Lewis for his autograph.
I mean, and she's like, I'm such a huge fan of yours. Can you sign that? And that's what started kind of breaking it open. And everybody was like, can you sign it?
That's great. All right, well, I'll go watch. I'll watch it tonight, probably.
Okay, watch it.
All right. Now let's downshift into something really terrible. Okay. All right.
Stop.
Wow.
Stop.
Whew. Okay. So, man. So we have a divorced woman. Mm-hmm. With, you know, some piece of shit absent husband, and she's got a tough road to hoe there, right?
Yeah.
And an older son with autism, mm-hmm. and trying to make her way. Okay. Yep. And she winds up in a small rural, some might say hick town.
She might say that. Did she?
She was no fan of that place. She was no fan of that town.
Well, I had to set it up because it's been a saga. You know, like what I felt like it was important to really showcase where she was.
Yeah, setting's very important.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So what I found interesting was that it was such a small town that they really didn't have the resources for her son's individual educational plan, right? His IEP. Okay. Mm-hmm. They just kind of threw him in with everybody. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Okay. My family's best friends growing up was a really big Irish Catholic family called the Kennedys. They had 5 kids. The dad died young and the mom, Ann Kennedy, really had her hands full with four older boys. All, I mean, really good kids, really loyal kids. And some of them were Hellraisers, like two of them were Hellraisers, and two of them kind of really towed the line and were great athletes. They were all great athletes. And the youngest, their fifth child, was a girl, excuse me, named Kellyanne, and she was born with Down syndrome. Okay. So she was tough as nails out of the gate because she had four older brothers who just treated her like she didn't have Down syndrome, right? Mm-hmm. And then very small town, and the schools IEP wasn't even a thing back then. Okay.
Oh, yeah, right.
She was just in regular classes.
Mm-hmm.
She was in regular elementary school classes, right? Yeah. A kid with Down syndrome. Like they didn't mm-hmm. have the special ed resources enough to be able to accommodate her. And she grew up strong and she grew up smart. And my brother jokes that Kellyanne had, cause she's my brother's age. Unfortunately she died during COVID, but she had her own bank account before my brother had a bank account. Like she could balance a checkbook before my brother could. So that was a joke. And I miss her a lot. And so in that situation, I mean, I don't know how Kellyanne could have grown up really like stronger or better, you know, because mm-hmm. she was surrounded by a bunch of people that loved her and didn't treat her like she had a disability, oddly enough, you know. Mm-hmm. And she obviously did, and everybody knew that she did, you know. But we all just took the cues from her older brothers, you know. Mm-hmm. And and she was really
well, I think that the thing is that this family did not have a lot of support.
No,
you know, when you have a big family,
big difference.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Wow. And so the town McCleary is what it's called? McCleary?
Yeah, McCleary.
McCleary. Mm-hmm. So it was a logging town, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then it exploded into a population of 1,400. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. With a police force of three plus the chief.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds, to some people, that would sound idyllic, right? I'm sure you could get a big piece of property and your property taxes are going to be low. And, you know, if you like living in the woods, I mean, that could sound pretty great. It wouldn't be great to me, like maybe an Airbnb for a weekend, you know, to say I roughed mm-hmm. it a little bit, but I wouldn't want to like hang out there. But so she was snake bit, right? She was, her ex-husband kind of messed her up, you know? I'm sure she felt like kind of unhappy with her lot in life, you know, and she was doing the best that she could. She didn't want to go meet anybody. She was afraid to really start dating. She, you know, just had to, she had to keep the lights on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of, you know, this actually reminded me of my mom a lot, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. my mom was a single parent, and just what you have to endure. Not only just financially, but then the judgments and the, you know, just all this, you know, it was taking me back. And you know, I really felt for her, you know, and she, despite all the snake bites and everything she'd been going through, she was ferocious in her, you know, lioness for her family. Yeah. Yeah. She wanted to do the best she could to keep them safe. And that's the thing. She was, you know, looking up sex offenders to show her kids, like, you know, right. I mean,
or just to make sure that she was, you know, if she was going to date somebody, that they weren't on the sex offenders list. I'm sure, you know, who's she going to allow around the house? You know, like that's a legit question, you know, for mm-hmm. someone with their guard up that much, you know?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
And it sounds like, that Lindsay grew up quick for a 10-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, and that long ago, 2009, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's mm-hmm. 15 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, she had a cell phone mm-hmm. already at 10. Mm-hmm.
Well, know? I mean, I could see why the mom would want to give her the cell phone. Like, hey, they kind of got booted out of the daycare. And so they were home alone. You know, she was at work, and like what that's like, where you have to worry about your kids and you're 30 minutes away and, you know, you want to know, hey, they're okay. You know, so you get the cell phone, and that's why she got it.
And more so than that, like, it just seemed like Lindsay was a little advanced, you know, like cutting up her clothes and stuff at 9 or 10 years old, you know, and being that into fashion and stuff. I mean, is that in your experience? You raised girls. I raised girls. It just seems a little, you know, and listen, it could be the byproduct of a broken home and wanting independence and acting out and all that. It could be that, I'm sure. It just seems she was a little ahead of her time, a little mature for 10.
I think that she just was like creative, imaginative, and like just right. wanted to be different. She didn't want to be like everybody else. And yeah. raising girls myself, they, you know, they were and are, you know, incredibly intelligent, imaginative girls. They never like
independent.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like with Lindsay, I think that she just was like, you know, she strikes me as a girl that really wanted to stand out and just do what she wanted. And it sounds like she just has, you know, ran a mile a minute. Her mom would say like, hey, yeah. I just get tired listening to you, you know?
Right. She still spoke of her daughter after, you know, 15 years in a very exasperated tone sometimes when she thought about the shit that Lindsay would put her through. And I'm like, I hear you, girl. Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is one of those nightmare scenarios. You know, she leaves, you think you're going to see her in 15 minutes and you never see her again. You know, that's hard. Yeah, that's really, really hard, you know? And we talk all the time about the good old days of Gen X, and we're like, bug off, our parents didn't know even know where the hell we were, blah, blah, and all that. And there is a downside to that, because kids got snatched up. They did.
Mm-hmm.
They did. I don't know with the same regularity that it's happening today or not. I really don't know. But, you know, we tell our kids, no, don't go anywhere alone. You know, always have a buddy at school, even at the mall, especially on the streets, you know? Mm-hmm. But
I mean, this kind of thing is actually incredibly rare where a stranger snatches you, you know, it's more like rare. Something happens within the family. Like, you know, this is actually incredibly rare, you know, which is why the brother probably they were looking at him, even though he was freaking 11 years old, because it's more likely that something happens within the family or somebody, know, somebody than someone, a stranger, you know, just snatching you. And what I heard was like everything that went wrong like that, that just, you know,
she wound up alone through circumstance. I mean, she didn't have her phone.
Have been alone. Like it was so weird.
She should have had her phone with her. Like so many things. Mm-hmm. It's that cascading series of failures, you know, that lead to things. It's never one thing, you know, it's always a bunch of things that have to happen just right for fucking disaster to strike. And that's fucking brutal. It's brutal.
Yeah.
So I heard two words in this episode that I don't think I've ever heard spoken. And this would be what, like our 130th episode.
Okay. Give it to me. What?
Two words. Clairvoyant.
Mm-hmm.
And psychic. The cop said that when it went worldwide, because that's when you get everything. You get the psychic, Star Kong, you get but the mom claimed that Lindsay was clairvoyant. She used the word clairvoyant.
You know, and I knew you were going to like, oh, Carolyn with your voodoo, whatever. But like, there's something that happened.
Go ahead.
I have it right here. Premonitions in my little notes. Premonitions. Oh, here's, look at it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Okay. This is how I relate to this. Okay. My daughter, my second born, when I had my three sons, every time she would come to me and she'd be like, Mommy, you know, obviously the first time she was a little girl and she's like, Mommy, I'm scared. I think you're going to have the baby. I want everything to be okay. And she would, all of a sudden that night had the baby. The second, what? My gosh, forget it.
No, please, please continue. No, I'm all ears. Go ahead. Please, I'm on the edge of my seat.
And she did that with every, to the point where it freaked me out. Like, am I gonna die here? Like, because she was that serious about it. Mm-hmm. You know, that, what, you don't believe, I know you don't believe, but I'm just saying, if your daughter went up to you and was like, Daddy, I know you're going to have a baby. Mm-hmm. Is everything going to be okay? Mm-hmm. You know, what?
Hey, Criminal Mischief Nation. Have you been thinking about starting a new business? Or maybe you already have a business and you've been wanting to get into the online game, but haven't because there's just so many platforms. Where do you even begin? I've got the answer. Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform that's revolutionizing both brick and mortar stores and online sites. You know, that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in store, on social media, and beyond. What's cool is that Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Seriously, they track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock, which means you can connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/mischief. That's MISCHIEF, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/mischief to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/mischief.
No, I'm just trying to figure out if you're serious.
What?
If you're serious.
No, I'm not serious. I do think that she, my daughter that I'm speaking about, has always been very sensitive and just very in tune with me. And so, you know, that's what I attribute it. Do I think that she has supernatural powers? No. But I could see how if you had a daughter say that to you, and then this horrible, horrible thing happens, and you're just, you go back in time and you're like, yeah, you ascribe some kind of higher power to it. You know, I mean, I could see how people would do that and how she would do it. I'm not going to discount her experience.
I'm not going to discount her experience either, because the last thing I would try to do is tell her how to feel or belittle anything like that. Right. But just hearing clairvoyant is a little weird. That's all. That's all I'm saying. You know, and as far as your daughter goes with, you know, being, you know, 3 for 3 on when you were going to have a baby, you know, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. I think great. Great. She should put that to that power to use in other areas. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's not like she, you know, I don't bring that. I mean, this is like the first time I think I've ever like brought that up as like, you know, I'm talking about it because I was thinking that you would, of course, make fun of me for this. And so I was trying to arm myself with don't choke on that gummy bear. And I just think that like, I do think that, you know, kids come in, you know, they have all different abilities. And I just think that, you know, I just don't want to discount what she went through. You know,
no, I won't. I'll just focus it on you instead. So Because the question is, like, what's more likely, right? What's more likely? That the laws of the universe were suspended and your daughter was able to see the future, or she made a lucky guess three times in a row?
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about it like I think that she actually has superpowers. What I'm talking about is that, you know, being a parent sometimes can be creepy when your daughter comes up to you and says, "Mommy, are you going to be okay?" And like, you know, and because, you know, for a child, you know, they're excited for a baby brother or something like that. But obviously, you know, they're afraid that something could happen, you know, to their parents. So for me, it wasn't like I felt like she was clairvoyant or anything like that. It was a stress that I wanted to ease her worry, you know?
Right. So what do you think was actually going on with Lindsay when she was telling her mother, "I have such a bad feeling that something terrible is going to happen to me"?
I mean, that could be like, to me, it's like they're this impending move. The fact that they didn't know where they were going to go yet. The fact that, I mean, I think it's related.
Right. I take the 30,000 foot view of what you just said is that I think it's a symptom of just a general state of fear that her daughter was feeling because she hadn't had a lot of stability or security in her life. And she was 10 years old. She doesn't know how to process those emotions. And they manifested themselves in an anticipation of something terrible because she had experienced terrible things before, right? Her dad's not around. They moved to a new place. You know, I mean, the parents, for as hard as we try, we can't hide shit that's going on from our kids 100% of the time.
Absolutely. You know? And right. In fact, so, they pick it up. It's more what we don't say than what we actually say, how much we reassure them. And then they see the knit on our brow and just our tense stuff. And that's hard because, you know, I mean, like I said, back to my daughter, it's like, you know, I didn't want her to worry. She was clearly, I could tell that she was worried, you know? I just think that Melissa was probably tortured by this. And that's what makes me really just, it's already sad to begin with. And then she's got to deal with this, you know?
I can't watch these movies, right? I'm serious. Like that movie Prisoners with Hugh Jackman, that Denny Villeneuve directed a few years ago with the kids going missing. That Mel Gibson movie Ransom or whatever with the kids gone with Gary Sinise as the bad guy. I'm like, I can't even watch those. It's just so like, how do you live? Like, how do you just get up and do anything in the day with that huge question mark of where's my child? I can't. I mean, what the? How is she talking to you? Like, I don't get it. I really don't get it. I would have to be medicated to the point where I didn't know my fucking name. Right. Just to be able to sleep, you know? So, but anyway.
No, I mean, I get, I totally, and I think that what resonates for me with this story is, or this, what happened here is it's kind of a turn on how we've done other cases where the town gets together and they really work hard to, you know, and it's just like, they support the family and it just feels like Melissa has just had to go through it. And yet she has this strength of like, you will see my daughter.
Right.
And I really respect that immensely. Although obviously it's so tragic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And they got a lot of help from law enforcement agencies. They really came out. And
oh, absolutely. They did.
Mobile offices from the FBI and all that shit. That must've been, man, oh man.
For months.
They had some really real dedicated officers. And for whatever reason, it got caught up in the zeitgeist. She winds up on People magazine, okay, and then it goes global. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to hear him say that was a blessing and a curse. You know, it was a blessing because they got a lot of tips coming in, but it was a curse because they had to give credence to each and every one of them, and that just created so much work. These whack jobs calling from fucking Belgium is like a carnival fucking psychic saying, "I think I know where she is." No, come on, shut the fuck up. But, and so then there is a long period of dormancy with regard to the investigation, right? But then they get some breaks, right? They get some, and they wind up searching this huge portion of the woods, right? I'm getting ahead of myself. They searched the woods when they found the skull, right? Then they had that huge search. Okay. Mm-hmm. So years and years and years go by, and hunters in a remote part of the state find what they think is a human skull. They do the right thing. They call the cops. The cops say, yes, it's human. Goes to FBI, Quantico for a long time. It's not associated with any particular case. So it was way down on the DNA match list. They finally do it. They get the hit. They know that it's Lindsay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then that triggers this huge search of the woods. And then you didn't tie up that loose end. So that search didn't find anything else, right?
Not that they've released, not that we know of. I mean, they're pretty tight-lipped with everything, as they obviously have to be. But I think that they, according to Rose, the person that's the PI, that she believes in this case, and I think she's working with law enforcement, because I've talked to her before, and she's like, they basically are like, I can't tell you anything because they won't give me access to, she's working with them. Right. So I think that they really thought that Paul Beaker guy was going to, maybe tie it up there.
I'd be scared shitless if I were him. Right. Because this case had so much passion behind it. And, and they find out that he's wrong on this rape in 03, the two 17-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And they're probably want to paint him with that same brush, And well, you did that, then you did this, motherfucker,
Well, he's already away for 30 years. Right. So on the rape charge. And so, I don't think he's getting out anytime soon. Now, whether or not if he was good for it, but there's no DNA. There's no, they have the partial skull, but it's going to be really hard to tie anybody to this.
Of course.
And then the sheriff saying somebody knows something. I think that they think that somebody does know something, because somebody's got to know something, because how did she get from McCleary 3 hours away?
Trunk of a car. What do you mean how?
Well, no, did he take her somewhere first? And then, it's not like he immediately took her there.
The reason that I would push back on the somebody knows something, it goes back to what we were talking about. It's a small town. Nobody around, right? Mm-hmm. If it was one of those, however many 10-minute stretches where there's no traffic in this 1,400 person rural town, okay, and she's walking between 4th Street and 6th Street, and he just says, hey, come here, kid. She goes, no, blah, blah, blah. He goes, watch this, grabs her, throws her in the car. He's out of town in a minute, right? Just gone. McCleary in his fucking rear view, heading into the woods of Washington State, gone.
I know, but you have to, was she killed right away?
Right. That's, and unfortunately, I don't think there are any answers to those questions, and that's the brutal emotional nature of this is, the things you want the answers to the most, you're probably never going to get. And that's awful to even contemplate, wow. So, two of my favorite words in true crime. Surreptitious sample. Love it. Like, if that were a job, I would do that job, right?
I know.
All you have to do is get a throwaway DNA sample of this person. I'm like, fucking done. No time frame. Awesome.
So you'd like to follow people around?
Just follow them around, not to get into their business, but to just find something that they throw away. Like, here it is. Hope this puts away a bad guy. There you go. Who's next?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that it's like who knows? I think that a lot of people had hoped that it was announced that they thought, okay, now we're going to know, we're going to find out. So I think that, if they had anything, they would have charged him,
And it's not like they can say, hey, we'll make your rape conviction better if you admit to a murder. No, it's not like they have that hanging over him, like with a serial killer that's already doing life. Like, give us some more information mm-hmm. and we can give you a color TV. No, he's like, he's got absolutely no reason to admit to anything mm-hmm. else if he ever wants to see the sky again, you know? So that's, yeah, it's, again, it's just everything lines up to like, you're fucked in this one. You know, there's no way you're going to get answers.
And, I know.
It just makes my heart break for the mom. What's her, Melissa? Is that her name?
Yeah, Melissa.
Yeah. Whew. Strong woman, I'll tell you.
Yeah. I mean, she's not, she says this basically her, this ruined her life and her relationship with her son.
And her son's life.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, you know, that's the thing about these cases, that it's not just the person who lost their lives. It's all this collateral damage. Right. And, you know, why they're important, you know, they, and I do believe that this case is incredibly important to law enforcement, even after all these years, you know?
Agreed. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, hopefully, you know, I don't even know where to place my hope in technology improving. I don't, like, what can we hope for here? A deathbed confession? Maybe. If someone saw something, an attack of conscience that will make them come forward, maybe. I don't even know what to hope for.
I mean, as we've learned, most people can't keep their mouths shut. And yeah. maybe they'll find something somewhere that will connect the case, you know, that yeah. will connect them to the case. You know, I don't know. But they're still searching property. That happened in 2023. Yeah. So yeah. I think that they have some things that they're thinking about, but they're not sharing, obviously.
Wow. All right. Well, hard to say nice job on this one, but nice job on this one. I always love the access that you get and how willing people are to talk to you about stuff. That's great. Well done with a tough interview with the mom. That had to be hard for you. So good for you.
You know, yeah. I mean, like I said, this case and the mom and the situation, it just, you know, again, being a single parent is not easy. You know, my mom went through hell with this, the same kind of thing, you know, and I mean, not obviously the same, but in terms of the struggle, yeah, yeah. of, you know, yeah. having people, you know, and, you know, it's just awful. You know, you're right. It was hard.
Yep. Okay. Well. Again, we're the beneficiary of Carolyn Osorio, so thank you very much.
Stop.
And thank you, everybody, for listening and for hanging out with us today during a decidedly difficult episode to listen to and talk about, but important. If you enjoyed it, please consider going over to Apple and giving us a review, maybe sharing it with your friends, rating us 5 stars. Come on, bring it. And please consider supporting the great companies that support our show. Carolyn, would you like to add anything?
Nope. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yes. Stay safe out there, everybody. Stay safe out there, everybody. Bye.
From Cloud 10, Criminal Mischief is a pie in the sky production recorded in the beautiful Pacific Northwest. We're produced by Brandon Morgan and myself, music by Soundstripe. I'm Carolyn Osorio, your writer and host.
Hello, the world. We are They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck. And we are sisters that want to tell you about lesser known murders.
Our cases are always compelling, maybe even a little scary, with just enough banter to keep it interesting.
You can find us at theywillkill.com
or anywhere you listen to podcasts. See you there.
See ya.